Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Zingari, and I just want you to know that we've edited this podcast for brevity, so you hear all the good stuff quicker. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Highway safety officials are growing concerned about some trends in people's driving habits. More and more people seem to be driving much faster on the state's major roads. Tailgating at high speed is becoming much more common. Some drivers seem very rude. Recently, we've had cases of road rage in Vermont where shots were fired. And despite a law banning the use of handheld cell phones while you're driving, one survey says a greater percentage of Vermont drivers use these phones more than any other state in the country. So what is happening out on Vermont's roads, and what can be done about it? These are some questions we have for our guest today, Keith Flynn, who is the chief of the Governor's Highway Safety Program, and William Boniak, who is the chair of the Vermont Highway Safety Alliance and also the Orange County Sheriff. Great to have you both here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Keith, just to start us off, do you think we've seen a change in attitude on the part of some drivers in the last 5 or 10 years? I mean, it seems like if you're doing 65 or 70 on the interstate, that almost every car is whizzing by you, and a lot of them are going over 80.
I think that there have been over the last few years. One of the things that we've seen is there's been a cultural change in driving habits. And one of the things that we're looking at the Governor's Highway Safety Program is having an effect on those behavioral patterns and the choices that people make when they get behind the wheel. The reality is that no one wants to get hurt when they're driving or hurt someone else. So what we want to do is get the culture to change to the point where we're saying, look, we need to make good choices when we're driving, and we need to implement those changes every day when we drive, whether it's speeding, whether it's looking at your cell phone while you're driving. Yeah, we have laws against texting while you're driving. We have laws against speeding, but we need to look beyond those laws and really look at the choices that people are making. And those are one of the things that I think where you're going to see the focus go to. Why are people making some of those choices, and what can we do to affect those choices?
So as you look at some of those cultural changes, why are people making these choices?
Well, I think one thing in regard to the texting, we're living in a different society than we were, you know, 20 years ago. We're all connected to our cell phones. Everybody gets – we're getting our news from our cell phones. We're getting information from our cell phones. We're communicating with our cell phones. They're small computers. And we have a hard time becoming untethered to them. And as a result, it's carrying on to our operation of the vehicles. We need to change the culture so people believe that operating a motor vehicle is a full-time job. It's not something that you can do part-time and the other part look at your cell phone. And that's just a cultural change that we need to adjust to and say, look, we need to make better decisions when we're driving. You can't be texting and driving. You can't be distracted. Not only is it bad for you, but it's bad for other people that are out there using the roadways. Nobody wants to hurt anybody else or get hurt, and we need to make sure that that's part of the conversation. Make good decisions for you. Make good decisions for other people using the roadways.
And in order to achieve that cultural change, is it primarily a public education effort, or is it punitive and say to people, we're going to really raise the fines and cause all sorts of problems for you?
I think that it's probably a combination of all those things. I think that it's a combination of good targeted enforcement, recognizing where we have a high amount of crashes, that we need to increase enforcement there as a reminder to people that are using the roadways that, you know, you do need to slow down, or you do need to be aware that you're entering a construction zone, or you do need to be aware that it's a pedestrian area. A high law enforcement presence can bring that attention. Also, there's a strong education component. We need to make sure that we are educating the public, and that starts younger than when people are beginning to drive. This is something that when small kids get into cars, whether they're in elementary school or even younger, it's second nature for them. You get in, you buckle up. You do that for safety. We have some good numbers in Vermont as far as our seatbelt compliance. We're at, you know, almost 90%. 9 out of every 10 drivers in Vermont, according to our most recent survey, are getting in and buckling up. What we need to do is we need to get that message to the remaining 10%. Because of that remaining 10%, over 50% of those are some of the victims and some of the consequences of our fatalities. The people that are dying in our fatalities in Vermont, over 50% of those aren't buckled. We can do better than that. And it's through a combination of education, enforcement, and good engineering. You know, we need to take that data that we're getting from our crashes and look at how we're engineering our highways, making sure that we have, you know, appropriate sign markings, that we have appropriate intersections, that it's the best way to get through those. There are a number of factors. There is no silver bullet. It's a combination of them all.
Bill, we mentioned at the start of the program that you're the chair of the Vermont Highway Safety Alliance. Tell us something about that group. What is that group comprised of?
It's comprised of civilians, business people, law enforcement. We have approximately over 60 different groups, individuals involved with it. We work off of stats we receive from AOT, from law enforcement, and we review the stats and then we make recommendations. We also, in doing this, we're also putting out public safety messages, and most recently we're working with we're at the Champlain Valley Fair, and we have a booth set up there, and also they call a rollover convincer, and it's showing the use of the proper way to use seatbelts and what happens if you do not use seatbelts. So it's a multi-pronged approach. So it's law enforcement, some civilians, and also the other professionals, everything from bicycle safety to the Vermont automobile dealers. So we're all working together, and it's just what Keith said. There's no silver bullet, but we're working, you know, a multi-pronged approach to, you know, highway safety.
So tell us, you're also the sheriff in Orange County. So what's happening at the local level? What are you observing in terms of people's driving habits?
We do see a lot of aggressive driving, speeding, and, you know, I can attest personally, you know, right here on the interstate between exit 4 and exit 8, I personally have witnessed, you know, texting and driving and aggressive driving. And the higher speed limits that you actually talked about in the beginning, 80 plus miles an hour, I'm driving 70, 75, and people are just coming up on me really quick and passing me. And as I said earlier, all the tickets I have written in the last 2 years have been on the interstate, and they've all been right around 90 miles an hour. It's incredible. You know, and here are all excuses, everything from, well, I'm coming back from Florida and I just set my speedometer cruise control at 80 miles an hour. And all of a sudden that person's catching up with traffic. And I was actually right there when this happened, where the person came up upon us very quick and then went to the right, to the left, to the right, trying to go around traffic. So finally I just slowed down, backed off, and then we're actually in Montpelier here. We're into the work zone, and he was still doing 80 miles an hour. So he wasn't very happy getting a ticket that was twice the fine on it. So, but he admitted he was just cruising right along.
Let's start off with Sylvia, who is calling from South Burlington. Hi, Sylvia. Welcome to the program.
Great. So my main thoughts are that I was glad someone brought up education. I think that people have sort of forgotten that the rule is if you're in the left lane, that you're passing traffic, and if you're not passing traffic, you should just get out of the way. I think that would solve 85% of the problem, that everybody just gets on board with, let's keep the left lane for, you know, moving around people that can go as slow as they want to go in the right lane. That's totally legit. That's what it's for. But the left lane is just for moving through stuff. I think that would take care of a lot of it. But the second question that you haven't brought up yet is just example. And I wanted to just briefly mention, I myself have experienced being pulled over in traffic, in the middle of a traffic intersection. The police left, asked me to stop in basically a left turn lane in on a main road, and proceeded to give me a warning for speeding in traffic. This was, I've seen it time and time again, coming off highway ramps. It used to be that they would move us off into a safe zone, and now they insist. I asked, do you want me to move off into the parking lot that's 100 yards down the road? No, I want to stay here. I am flabbergasted.
Okay.
This is a major example, I think. It's an example to the community that anything you want to do is okay.
Okay, Sylvia, we really appreciate your phone call and some of the points that you're raising. Let's start off with this. Left lane is for passing, Keith. You see this all the time on the interstate, that somebody is in the left lane and maybe they're doing 60 or 65 and somebody comes up right behind them and, you know, is like 5 feet from their bumper, and maybe they're honking, maybe they're flashing lights. What about that kind of situation?
Well, again, thanks for calling, for mentioning the education piece, because I absolutely agree that it's an education that needs to be revisited every few years, because times are changing. Cars are different than they were in the 60s. Cars, you know, are faster now. Cars are lighter. There are a number of things that we can address with education. You know, the driving component, just about every car you're in now has a big screen in the middle. And, you know, that too can be a distraction. We need to be aware of that. But as far as people on the interstate, there's a maximum speed and a minimum speed. And people need to be educated in regard to those speeds to be aware of it. Now, granted, weather conditions can affect how fast people are going to drive on the interstate. And that's important to be aware of that. But 99% of driving is applying common sense, being aware of your surroundings, being aware of other traffic on the road, operating at a safe speed for what the conditions present. So, again, part of the cultural change that we need to start employing is – use your common sense. Think about what's around you. Make sure that you get there safe. And that's really what it's all about. It's not about trying to save an extra 2 minutes by going 70 miles an hour down the interstate. It's a matter of getting there safely and saying, okay, I'm going to eat those 2 minutes because I'm going to drive at a speed that's safe. It's just applying common sense.
Bill, what about Sylvia's concerns of getting pulled over in what could be a dangerous situation?
Absolutely. I agree with her. You know, you need to – the officer needs to be paying attention where they're pulling people over. And if she really – if really feel it is a danger, you know, what I would do is, you know, just very nicely tell the officer, I don't feel safe here. Let's get this off to the side of the road. And if you still don't get nowhere, that officer has a supervisor. And, you know, call, whether it's the sheriff's department, state police barracks, or municipal department, call. And it to say, this is the situation I had, and I didn't feel safe. And, you know, maybe there's a reason why the officer is doing that. I don't know. You know, I'm not there. But, you know, the officer, you know, we want to be safe when we're pulling people over too. We want to make sure that we're not going to get hit. And, you know, we too want to go home at night. So if the situation's unsafe, you know, first tell the officer, and then second, if you need to, call that department, that agency.
Let's talk to Dan, who is calling from Orwell. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. I live down in Orwell and just south of an area where they've done a safety corridor. That's been a really nice thing to see. But I travel down to Fairhaven on 22A quite routinely, and boy, that's a white-knuckle drive. It's mostly because of aggressive passing into the oncoming traffic around bends, over short rises, blind passing. It's absolutely insane how many times there's been close calls. Part of the problem is there's a striping that indicates it's a passing zone. I think effectively down 22A all the way to Fairhaven, there could be a double yellow lines all the way down, and that would improve things. The addition of signs that say dangerous passing area would help. Lastly, more enforcement, more troopers. If there needs to be a helicopter up near watching this, that would be fantastic. A point would be a great source of this would be to give a call to the Addison-Rutland bus drivers. They've experienced almost dead stop, coming to a dead stop to avoid people coming in the opposite direction that are passing blindly. It's very dangerous.
Dan, thanks very much for your phone call. Keith, one theme that we're seeing with a lot of people who are calling in today is the whole idea of enforcement and that there needs to be more enforcement. Can these laws be enforced, speeding laws, the things that Dan was talking about? You mentioned earlier a cultural change really being a combination of public education, engineering, and enforcement. How much emphasis can be placed on enforcement?
Well, it's interesting with enforcement because I think everybody would agree. You know, we have a state of approximately 625,000 people. We have limited resources available to us for enforcement. So what we have to do with our enforcement in Vermont is be smart with it. We need to look at the data and tell us where the data is screaming for more enforcement. If we see an area that has a higher amount of crashes, or if we the data tells us that there's a high speed area, we need to dedicate our resources to those areas where the data is telling us. That is using the best available evidence, the best available approach to it, because the reality is police can't be everywhere all the time. So when they are at a place, it needs to be some place that is dictated to them by the data. And that's something that we've really been moving more toward in Vermont, is using data as a tool, another tool in the toolbox to make our roadways safer. And I know the sheriff's been using it down in his county, and I know that it's also been used down in the Fairhaven and in Rutland County.
Let's talk to Anne, who is calling from Heartland. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I have two comments, and I think you've addressed both of them more or less. But the first one is I drive during the day for work, so I'm on 91 and 81, and it's during work hours. And I have a new car, but even though it's hands-free for the navigation and the phone system, it's really distracting to try to use. So I'm just making that comment because sometimes we talk about the texting and using a phone, but sometimes it's that distraction of the new car systems that is just as distracting. And secondly, I would just say that in the middle of the day when I'm out driving, I am amazed at the speed that people are driving, and there doesn't seem to be any enforcement out in the middle of the day. And I generally set my cruise control at 69, 70 miles an hour, and people are just flying past and at a very, very high rate of speed. And they seem to be both in and out of staters. So I just wanted to make those comments.
And thank you very much for your phone call. Keith, you were talking about this earlier in terms of new cars, big screens. Things are getting very complicated electronically. This is also part of the problem, isn't it?
Sure. And, you know, another thing to remember is distractions while you're driving can be anything. They can be trying to drink your coffee while you're driving to work. It can be turning around to situate the kids while you're driving down the road. Distractions are many. There can be many distractions. So it's not only the cell phone or the GPS or trying to change a radio station or trying to adjust, you know, where your coffee's sitting in the middle or trying to, you know, eat a hamburger while you're driving down the road. Distraction takes on many faces. So that's part of the mindset that people need to be in. If I'm going to be driving, I need to focus on driving. If I'm going to eat, I'll pull over and eat. You know, those are some of the things that we need to be looking at. But you're absolutely right. Motor vehicles are changing. You know, the whole autonomous operated vehicles, that's a whole other discussion. We are in the change of that right now. And it's a change that we've had for a number of years. Look how long we've had cruise control. Cars, you set the speed of a car, and it will drive at that speed while you're going. To some extent, that may have been one of the precursors for the autonomous vehicle. That's how it's happening. Now we're getting lane detection vehicles. We're evolving in the technology, and as we evolve with that technology, we're going to have to evolve in our thought processes and rethink about how we're driving, how we're engineering our roads, and what safety precautions we need to put in. But again, I'll get back to my first point. It's all a matter of common sense and thinking about what you're doing and concentrating on one thing, and that's driving.
Bill, I saw at one of the highway safety websites, I think it said 94% of all major crashes are due to driver error. So when you hear about autonomous cars, does that make you think, hey, this is going to be a way to have more safety in the future, or do you have some apprehension about it?
I do right now have a lot of apprehension, especially here, right here in Vermont. Look at our dirt. We have so many dirt roads. You know, a lot of these vehicles, they're developed in, you know, places, California, Michigan, where, you know, there's laned roads. Everything's the roadways are properly marked, the fog line, you know, center lines, and then all of a sudden you drive down a dirt road here in Vermont, and it all changes really quick. And you know, one of the things I do like is that when the proximity alerts, where when you come in, you know, a vehicle stops in front of you quickly. They're very good ideas, you know, but the self-driving vehicle, I think, still has a long way to go. You know, it's like anything else. It's a machine. We got to teach it. So it's, you know, the human mind is, you know, it's still so advanced compared to, you know, the autonomous vehicles right now. Have they changed in the years? Absolutely. But we still need to be very vigilant. When it comes to the autonomous vehicles right now. So I do have a lot of apprehension.
Let's turn to Bill, who is calling from Johnson. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind today?
Tailgating. They've been driving here 40 years in Vermont, and I think my anecdotes don't need a study. I think that tailgating is at the core of the attitude shift. And there's no credible threat of punishment for people who tailgate. And I think if you had a $500 five-point violation on tailgating and got some electronic technology to enforce it, starting on the interstates and maybe some of the state highways, and moved it around. I think once the word got out that people were losing their licenses for tailgating, you'd have something. So I'd be interested if there's technology. We can read it. We can read license plates. We can do speeding. I don't see why we can't tell the distance between two vehicles on the highway and get the plate. And, you know, the person in front's a witness. So I'd be interested in hearing their comments.
Okay, Bill, thanks very much. Bill, what do you think about that? How about enforcement of tailgating?
Absolutely. When we see it, you know, I know personally, if you can't have a car length minimum, but especially when you're driving, you know, the rule of thumb is, you know, 10 miles an hour per vehicle length. So, you know, you're doing 60, 70 miles an hour, you should be leaving, you know, 6, 7, 8, you know, 10 car lengths, you know, and when you're right on someone's bumper, they do deserve to get a ticket. And, you know, I believe, I was just trying to look over here real quick, but I believe it's probably going to be right now about a $162 ticket and 2 points on your license. But as the show goes on, I'll see if I can just double check and verify that.
Keith, we had someone email us who wanted to know, you know, why doesn't the state use cameras that are triggered by people who speed? We see this in some municipalities across the country. There are cameras up there. It detects somebody is speeding, takes a picture, bang, we got them. Could you use that on the interstate?
I think you probably could use the technology, but that's more of a policy issue right now as to whether or not Vermont wants to deploy that technology. So I think it's really a policy decision that people need to make. Could an argument be made that the deployment of that technology needs a closer look? Sure. I mean, we're all concerned about people in work zones. The people that work in those work zones are hardworking people that the work zone just happens to be their place of work that day. And it's important that people are using caution when they go through work zones because those people have families they want to go home to every day, and their workplace just happens to be on the road. So, you know, maybe that's a discussion that could be had in regard to that. There's certainly some high emphasis areas, for instance, school zones. We want our kids safe. We don't want people speeding through. But right now, those are policy decisions that haven't been addressed as of yet.
Bill, you found some information for us.
Yes. It's following too close, and it's 3 points on your driver's license and a $220 fine. So, you know, don't forget, if you're in a work zone, the fines get doubled. So that could be $440 within a work zone. So 3 points, if you accumulate more than 10 points in a two-year period, you're subject to suspension here in Vermont. So,
do you think it would make any difference, as one of our callers suggested? What if it was 6 points? What if it was double that fine?
You know, one of the things that we – you know, there's a group that sets up the fines through the Judicial Bureau. And, you know, one of the things that if the fines are too high, then people may not pay them and then they end up getting their license suspended and we'll have more DLS drivers out there. But, you know, the fines are to wake people up and make them think about what they're doing, how they're driving, you know, common sense. You know, if you're following too close, yes, you deserve that ticket. You're doing, you know, 10, 20, 30 miles over that speed limit. Well, actually, once you hit that threshold of 30 miles and over, besides getting a traffic ticket, you most likely are going to be arrested for excessive speed. And then that's where everything stops and your car is going to get towed and you'll be cited into court.
We got this email from CJ in Mansfield. It's easy to point the finger at drivers instead of reflecting on government's role in making highway safety safer and ways government could improve safety in the design of the system. If Vermont were truly interested in making highways less dangerous, they could employ automatic speed cameras, as we've just been talking about, and reduce interstate speeds to 55 miles an hour and ban the construction of signalized intersections and replace signals with modern roundabouts and mini roundabouts. Keith, what about the idea of going back to 55? Is that even doable?
I think it would be doable. But the question is that a policy that government wants to employ? That may be a hard sell because the speed limits vary so much from state to state. Vermont, our speed limit on the highway is 65. In New Hampshire, I believe there are spots where it's 70. You go down south and there are spots where it's 80. There's certainly an argument that can be made that the lower the speed limit, the safer the roads are.
Let's talk to Ed, who's calling from Brookfield. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Bob. My call relates to yet another use of the roads, namely that of cyclists and how cyclists are negligible objects on the road to many motorists. And the question is education. And I have 2 points. One is I know there's a statute on the books mandating a certain distance. I think it's 3 feet between any vulnerable user of the roads, not only cyclists, but pedestrians and people on horseback and so on. So that is, seems to be widely, people, drivers seem to be widely ignorant of that, because I speak of someone who wears basically 2 helmets. I mean, I'm a volunteer firefighter, but I also wear my bike helmet and see poor behavior fairly frequently on wearing both of my helmets. Education seems to, or awareness even, might be encouraged. I know other countries do it much more effectively. They have shoulders, and in particular Quebec has a series of road signs, pictographs really, no lettering, no reading, just showing the distance between cyclists and cars, just the line between them and an arrow.
Ed, we're almost out of time, but I want to get some reaction to your very important question. Keith, a lot of people who are cyclists say there are a lot of drivers who throw things at them, want to see how close they can get and scare them. This is a growing problem in Vermont as well.
Right. One of the things we're looking at the Governor's Highway Safety Program is ways to educate people on some of the laws of the road, to include the protections that pedestrians and others using other road users need. And as a caller said, that applies to people walking, people using bicycles, people riding horses. Again, it's awareness of while you're operating and making good decisions. And that's our focus. That's our goal. And our goal is to make our highways safer for everybody using them.
Well, we've been discussing some very important highway safety issues today with Keith Flynn, who is chief of the Governor's Highway Safety Program, and also Bill Boniek, who is chairman of the Vermont Highway Safety Alliance and also the sheriff in Orange County. Thanks for coming by. A lot of people very interested in this subject today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.